Get two.
Okay. And our speaker tonight is JC from Orchid.
Yay! JC!
Woohoo!
That's awesome, but that's what it is.
In a minute, damn. Almost done, ain't it?
Two levers.
That's right.
That's right, John.
Oh, Santa.
I mean Santa.
Santa.
My bad.
You're bad.
Right. J.
C.
C.
You forgot.
It's a lot more complicated than that. Sorry. Don't you know we alcoholics like to complicate things?
Definitely.
Capital J.
He's killing them, some of his minutes.
Yeah.
Good job.
Done. All right. Let's do this. All right, my name is JC Nelson, and I am an alcoholic.
Hey, JC!
All right. I spent the last 3 hours going, what the hell am I going to say? I'm going to talk about this, talk about that. No, I'm not going to do that. You know. And then I spent the last 5 minutes clearing my head, and now I don't know what to talk about. So let's see. All right. Well, all right. My sobriety date is February 2nd, 2008. I'm coming up on 6 years. I got sober when I was 20 years old, 2 weeks before my 21st birthday. I've never had a legal drink, and hopefully I never will. But let's do this. February 12th, 1987, I was born on a farm in Buellton. And my grandma delivered me while my dad was drinking tall boys and shooting crows off the crops. And I don't remember anything up until I was about 3 years old. I remember I was in preschool. The first self-centered wrong I can never remember committing was I was about 3 years old, and me and my sister were in preschool, and she was stapling something, and I wanted to push the stapler. You know, I wanted to staple the papers, and she wouldn't let me. So when she put her hand under it, I slammed it down on her fingers. And of course, I played it off. I didn't know it was an accident. I was crying more than she was, you know. And well, truth is, it scared me, and I felt really bad and really guilty. But that's the first self-centered wrong I can remember committing. And then I have no memories up until about 5 years old, when I tried to burn my neighbor's apartment building down because he stole my Hot Wheels and my Ninja Turtles. So I found a book of matches and went to the dry grass behind his apartment building and tried to set his house on fire. And which is funny, because I'm blown away about people throwing cigarette butts out the window and catching whole fields on fire. I don't know how they did that, because I lit an entire book of matches and couldn't catch a patch of grass that big, you know what I mean? So I guess God was blowing out my fire before it started, you know, just to help me out there. But anyways, and then jump start. So I grew up in Santa Barbara up until I was about 8 years old, and then we moved to San Ynez, and the start of second grade, and we lived about a mile away from school, so me and my sister would walk to school every day, and I don't know, man, I've always been able to kind of make friends, but I always gravitate towards the oddballs, you know, because I don't know. I guess I never really felt adequate enough to be with the popular kids. Even though, like, I never really had any enemies, I never really thought I was good enough to hang out with better class of people, you know, at the same time. And and that's how it's always been. I remember in first grade, though. In first grade, I was it was me and this other kid from Chile. And while everyone was learning how to add 2 + 2 and spell their names, me and him would go to every grade's math class and do their math. So I was in first grade learning greater than, less than, adding and multiplying fractions. And I've always kind of been like that. Things just kind of click in my head. And so to just to bring that into light, I never did anything in school. Absolutely nothing. You know, I would sit there and I would joke off. I was the class clown, you know what I mean? And I'd just joke around. I'd always be in the corner for talking, you know, and never did anything. But I always seemed to pass with either A's or B's because I'd get 100 on the test. You know, and it, things just always come easy like that for me. To jumpstart again, jump a few more years of advancement. I remember 8th grade, we moved to Napomo. And I had that geographic without really knowing what it was. You know, I'm going to a new school. You know, everybody made fun of me back there because I put myself out as this goofball clown and expected people not to make fun of me. You know, and now I'm moving to this new place and this new school and nobody knows me. You know, I could be anyone I want. I can do anything. You know, I get a fresh start. Well, what's funny about that whole fresh start thing is I gravitated towards the oddball kids, did the same exact thing, and got made fun of. You know, it's funny how anywhere you go, you kind of bring yourself with you. You know what I mean? It's like I'm gonna be this hip, slick, cool guy, and I'm gonna have all the popular friends, and everything's gonna be different. You know, and then I get there, and I'm myself. You know, because there's no one I can be other than myself. You know, I'm very open about that, and I always took pride in myself, even though I really didn't think high of myself. You know, I always had that pride and that ego behind me that I am who I am, and I don't care what you think about me, which I really did. I just kind of pushed that aside. You know what I mean? It's like I really have all those fears and insecurities and hurts from not being accepted. But I don't even want to be aware of it. So I just kind of learned to push all my feelings down inside at a way early age without drugs or anything. I learned how to just block everything out. So come high school, I was getting curious. You know, I seen all the movies where people were all smoking weed and seeing all weird shit going on. And I was getting curious. So one day, I was at my house in a FOMO, and I see my sister up at the little office building, and she was smoking some weed. I knew what she was doing, you know. So I walked up there, was like, "Yeah, let me hit that," you know, smoking out of a little aluminum can, you know. So I smoked, and I didn't feel nothing, man. At least I didn't think I did, you know. So 3 days later, she went and bought a bong. We hit it again. I felt that. You know what I mean? It was funny because we smoked like, I don't know, we smoked like a quarter of weed, and I couldn't walk back to my house. You know? She had to carry me. And then, I liked it. I really liked it. All my cares, all my fears, all my worries, everything was just gone out the window. And I was happy. I was happy and content with anyone, everything, and myself. I just kept doing it, you know. And then maybe like 4 days later, she took me over to a friend's house. We started hitting the bong. And then she popped in with a 12-pack. Two six-packs. She had a six-pack of Smirnoff Ice, a six-pack of Budweiser. You know, she sat them down right next to me. I grabbed the Budweiser, and I sucked it back in maybe 8 seconds. And grabbed a Smirnoff, sucked that one back in maybe 8 seconds. I decided I liked the Smirnoff a lot better, so I drank that whole six-pack, you know. and then I drank like maybe 3 more Budweisers, and I started getting that really warm feeling and that tingling sensation in your face, you know. And I started falling in love. I ended up, everything started kicking in all at once. And it ended up in a really bad night. I started getting deja vu and freaking out and sweating, you know. they ended up putting me asleep. But before that happened, that was the best feeling I have ever had in the world. Ever. Period. I want to feel like that 24/7. And that's what I did for the rest of my 6 years of drinking and using. I wanted to feel exactly like I did at that moment all the time. So I'd wake up in the morning, I'd hack up a lung, and usually puke while I'm peeing, and then grab whatever I can that's around the house, whatever's left over. I had a little bit of a Steely left with some cigarette butts, a couple loogies in it, knock that back, go wait for the bus, meet up with my friends at school. We'd go get high. At the end of the school day, we'd all pool whatever change we got together and split a pack of cigarettes and a 40 and go find someone who had weed, you know. And and then it turned out, you know, I started working a little bit, started stealing some money from my mom, you know, to support my habit, and which was developing into a bad habit. And started going from there. Learned how to pick locks. I had a friend who taught me how to pick locks. So my mom would lock up all her cigarettes and alcohol. So I'd go into her room when she leave the house, and I'd go pick the lock real quick. And get everything I wanted, and she'd just blow it off like, oh, I locked it up, you know, he couldn't have took that, you know. And I actually got away with it for a long time. And progressively I started blacking out. About sophomore year, I had my first blackout on New Year's Eve, and I swore I'd never drink hard alcohol again. I'm only going to drink beer. And then the next day we ran out of beer, and I started drinking hard alcohol, blacked out again. You know, and it continued like that on a constant, like, blackout for the next 3 years. If I was drinking, which I was always drinking, I'd black out about 2 hours, 3 hours into it, and just wake up in some fucked up situation doing something really messed up, or something really messed up happening to me. Or the occasional wake up, my truck's parked perfect, and everything's okay, and that was a good night, you know. And after a while, I got in trouble. I was chilling at this house in Oceano, and I was drinking my own little private bottle of Captain Morgan's private stock. I had my own private stock, and I was playing guitar in the garage, and I remember I was like maybe halfway down the label. All of a sudden I woke up with five cops, nightsticks in my back, shoving me in a duffel bag, putting a muzzle on my face, a helmet on my head, and leaving me in a holding cell. And I freaked out. I just freaked out. I tried my hardest to get out of that thing. I started screaming and going, I'm chasing them out the door like a little caterpillar, you know. And I got up on the glass and I started, get the muzzle off, dude, and then start slamming my head into the glass for another 2 hours, and screaming, I'm on a stereo. Right, so they come in, they grab me by my strap and slam me against the wall, right, and start walking off laughing, like, get back up. Chase them, trying to bite them, dude. They ended up strapping me to the handcuff rings and leaving me there. And once my adrenaline calmed down, I blacked out again, and I woke up fully dressed out, laying on my pillow. So, you know, I don't know. That was the first time I got arrested. I was in jail for a day and a half, and then I got OR'd. And I lasted about a week, and then I got my DUI. I woke up wrapped around a tree in my truck about, I don't know, a mile away from my house. And I don't know, my truck was fucked up. And I broke my collarbone, and I cut off my eyelid with the window. And the window shattered and cut off my left eyelid. Boom. The cops super glued it back on. And so they took me to jail. They took me to hospital first, but then to jail. I got a DUI. Lost my license. My truck was demolished, and I couldn't work. So there goes all my funds to go do what I want to do, you know. And that's when things started getting kind of rough. My mom, that's when my mom kicked me out for the first time. And I just kind of wandered from couch to couch in my friend's houses until I wasn't welcome anymore, because everything I was doing, you know, I black out and I'm a nut, you know, and I black out every time I drink, and I'm a nut, you know. So anyways, I end up not being welcome at places anymore, and I slept on a bench a few times, slept on the curb a couple times, slept in the park and under a tree a couple times. And then it hit me that I can just, like, go to my mom's house and sneak into my trailer and sleep there, and then look out the window, see if anybody can see me, and then bolt in the morning. So I started doing that when I didn't have any place to go. And And that worked for a little while until I got caught doing that. They let me stay at the house again. I was like, all right, you know. So now I'm back home and everything's all good, you know. And then once again, out again, in again, out again, back to jail, back out. And then before my first court date, I ended up, I got my disability check. So I had $400 in my pocket, and I'd been tweaking. I'd been up for maybe two, three days. And empty stomach, and so I went and got some Subway, and then I went over and ate it in front of Antonio's restaurant, and I knew, and the chick who was working the bar came out, she's like, JC, I was like, oh, no way, what are you doing? I knew the chick there, and she let me in, yeah, and she filled up my Dr. Pepper. I was like, you should put some Moe in that, you know, so she's like, all right, so she puts like, I don't know, 7-8 shots of Captain Morgan's in that. I'm drinking that, and I see her walk by with this fucking... Well, I've seen her make this thing. And then she comes back, and what is that? She's like, Long Island iced tea. It's like, give me one of those, you know? So I drank like 4 or 5 of those. And then ran next door to the hair salon. I was like, I'm buying iced teas! You know? Dude, those things are shit. So anyway, so I'm in there. I drank 4 or 5 of them. Started trying 3 shots at every single thing they had on the wall. And then one of the chicks from the hair salon was sitting next to me, and she got this blue thing. I was like, "What is that?" And she's like, "Adios, motherfucker." It's kind of like the iced tea, but it's got tequila in it. I was like, "Yeah, let me hit that," you know. So I drank 2 of those, and about halfway down my second one, adios, dude. I woke up at my house, went in a pool of my own blood, strapped to my feet, with my feet hitting the back door and window of the cop car, smashed it all over my driveway, and it was dark. And my dad was just staring at me. And then I blacked out again. So, anyways, I guess the story on that one was they dropped me off. A couple people dropped me off at my mom's house, and I was freaking out. Yeah, and she threw me out of the house, and I walked up the street to the neighbor's house and started banging on the door and going, that bitch locked me out. So a couple old people, they're like 75, 80 years old. I'm like, the bitch locked me out. You know? And this is in the police report. And then all of a sudden, my hand went through their window. You know? And I smashed their window all over the place, cut my arm up pretty bad, and then walked back down to the house. You know, so the cops got called on a burglary charge, which was what they got called on the first time. They ended up tackling me. The first time, when I was in the garage and they kicked me out, the cops were called on burglary because I kicked in the back door of the wrong house. But there was no signs of entry, so I only got vandalism. I guess I kicked it in and looked around, you know, and then walked in the front yard and got tackled. But on this one, yeah, and the cops couldn't. I was just freaking out. I was insane, and my mom called my dad. My dad brought Jimmy and Frank and Fred and over to the house to try to control me, and there was no controlling me. The ambulance refused to take me to the hospital, and so the cop ended up they finally tackled me down after like 3 hours, got me down and strapped me to my feet and threw me in the back of the car, and that's when my feet hit the window and I woke up for a second, and all I felt was pure shame. While looking into my dad's eyes and seeing that look on his face, that was the lowest moment of my life at that point. And I'll never forget that feeling. In fact, I feel it right now. But anyways, so then I got cleaned up. I finally went to court on all that. They cut me a deal. They said, oh yeah, do 30 days. Don't worry about no program. You know, all your things are on alcohol, but we're not going to give you an alcohol program. You know, and so I did 30 days in jail. I actually did 28, and I got out. I had 28 days clean and sober, 28 days off cigarettes. And as soon as that air hit me when I walked out the doors, I needed a cigarette, and I needed to get high, and I needed to get drunk, and that's what I did. And then I ended up about 3 weeks later. I was at a friend's house. We were smoking meth, and I was up maybe another 2 days. I got beat down, I told my friend to bring me back a sandwich. He brought me back a bottle of Absolut vodka instead. So I drank that and got like, I don't know, half the bottle in me. Blacked out again, and I woke up in my trailer with a broken jaw, torn ligaments in my shoulder, and my eyebrow flapped over my nose with actually it was scotch taped up on my forehead because my sister fixed me. Anyway, so I went to the hospital. My mom took me to the emergency room and got a CAT scan and all that, and they stitched me up, and my jaw was broken, you know. And then once again, she threw me out. She said, "Don't come back." And so I went around to all my friends looking for a place to stay. I ended up, they gave me a prescription for Vicodin and a bottle of codeine cough syrup. So I went to all my friends' houses, you know, and I ended up, this is the last thing I ever did. I popped 5 750 Vicodins, I snorted two, I smoked 3 bowls of weed, drank a 32 of Del Sol, and pounded half that bottle of codeine cough syrup, and I was not fucked up. And I didn't know why. I just felt like total shit, and I was not fucked up, and I could not make those feelings go away. And that's when my friend called me that I had worked with before, and he had a year and a half sober, and he just called me straight out of the blue, and he said, "What are you doing?" I said, "Dude, I ain't doing good." And he's like, "Well, come stay at my house, you know, come stay at my house." So like, okay, where you live? And I got a ride. I got dropped off there. And he took one look at me when I walked in the door. He's like, "Dude, ain't you done yet? You know, aren't you done yet? Look at you, man. You got nowhere to go, dirty as fuck. You can't even talk. You can't eat. Aren't you done?" You know, and it was the first time that I couldn't justify my behavior. You know, I couldn't blame anyone else for the things I've been doing. And I just broke down crying. I broke down crying, the first time I cried in years, you know, broke down crying, and I just said, "Okay, what do I do? You know, what do I do?" And he let me stay there for like 5 days, and by the second day, you know, I was feeling good, you know, right? The second day, I was like, "Yeah, I'm cool, man, I don't think I want to go there," because he said, you know, "I can get you into the sober living home," But it's going to take a little time. I'll make some phone calls. So like, all right. So I slept a whole day. And when I woke up the second day, I was feeling good, you know. And then he's like, "Oh, yeah, I got you into this place, man. But you got to wait a few more days." I was like, all right. And then when that third day hit, my all the withdrawals started kicking back like hard, you know. And I just kind of stayed in bed. I sweat. I shook. I didn't really smoke much. And my jaw hurt really, really bad. So I went to the cabinet and I took the other half of my bottle of codeine cough syrup and I pounded that thing and I went to sleep. And then, and that's why my clean date is actually the February 2nd, not the 29th. For the first 2 years of sobriety, I took my birthday on February 29th. And then I got honest and I remembered when I pounded that bottle and I changed it. You know what I mean? Because, you know, I really didn't, it was only a couple days, but it matters to me. And then, so now my clean date is February 2nd, which is Groundhog's Day. And, I just kind of guesstimated on that. It was about Groundhog's Day. so it's good enough for me. And, anyway, so I got put in my sober living home. Okay. When I said okay to Dave, to my friend Dave, I meant it. I said okay to absolutely everything. I surrendered myself to someone other than me. And when I got to my sober living home, he said, "You got to do this, you got to do that, you got to do this." I said, "Okay." He said, "There's the meeting hall's right down the street. You can walk there." I said, "Okay." He said, "There's a meeting tonight. I want you to go to it." I said, "Okay." And I went to it and I walked in. My first meeting, it was actually Narcotics Anonymous. And I walked in there. I knew absolutely no one in there. Nobody shook my hand. Nobody gave me a hug. Nobody said, "Welcome here." I walked in with a smile and a wired jaw and a smile, and I sat down. And when they asked for newcomers, I raised my hand and said, "I'm JC Nominator." And fuck, I heard absolutely nothing in that meeting, but I was so glad to be there because I knew that was where I need to be. See, my father's a crackhead alcoholic. That's why my mom left him, And then he got sober. Y'all know my dad. Anyways, he got sober. I'd been coming to it to the rooms. I grew up at the 1600 Club. And so like when I got to that meeting, that was the first meeting I've ever had for myself. And I felt at home. You know, it's like a lot of people bring their kids to these meetings. And just to let you know, they're going to do whatever they're going to do. You know, never stop me. Never stop Randy. Never stopped a lot of people from doing what they need to do to get to that point. But what does help is when we do get to that point, we have somewhere to go. We feel comfortable and we know this works because we see it in other people. We see it in our parents. And that was the feeling I had when I walked in that room was I know I'm in the right place. And I just continued to do everything I was told. You know, they told me to get a sponsor. I got a sponsor that day. And they told me to start working the steps. In my sober living home, I had to work the first three steps. So I did. I worked them three times. You know? But I worked the steps, right? In that pamphlet. And then with my sponsor, I had to call him for 30 days first. And I could not do that. It took me 90 days to call him for 30 days. He ended up saying, it was Crystal. It was Chris. And then he ended up telling me to write a note on the mirror. And every time I go into the bathroom to call him. And that worked for me. I needed that constant reminder. So I ended up calling him like 5-6 times a day. But I got 30 days of calling him after 90 days. And then I actually worked my first step with the sponsor. And in that 30 days, I had gone through those same pamphlets that they give us three times. And it's funny because I did it and then I'd read it. And then I'd look back at my other one and everything was totally different, you know. As when we get here, we don't really realize it, but we're fucked up, you know. Like mentally, not just physically, mentally fucked up, you know. And we have a hard time focusing and we don't really get things. Nothing like stuff just doesn't click right. Well, at 12 days when I did it the second time, it was a little bit better. And when I did it the third time, it was a little bit better. And then I actually worked my steps for the first time, the first two steps at least. And then my sponsor at the time ended up going out. So I went and I got another sponsor. And then I started the process all over again. I called him for 30 days. And then I started my steps again. And I went through about a step every 2-3 months. Because I'm a big procrastinator and I don't, you know. I don't do anything until I have to, you know. If I have to do it, I will do it, and I will do it to the best of my ability. If I don't have to do it, it can wait, you know. So I was sitting on my fourth step for maybe, I think I've had about a year and a half when I finally did my fourth step. I was coming to meetings in April. And everything was on the fourth step. Oh yeah, I did my fourth step, and I'm like, oh shit, I got to do my fourth step. You know, oh shit, I got to do my fourth step. And finally one day, I just had a wild hair up my ass. I had been feeling kind of antsy and burn out on the meetings. You know what I mean? I was at that point where it's like, I don't want to go there. You know, I was working a lot and I wasn't going to too many meetings, but I wasn't, you know, and I was kind of burnt out. And then all those feelings started coming in. I started getting resentment, started getting anxious. And all my defects started coming out and, you know, and it was hurting me inside. And I got to that point where I needed to do something. So I grabbed my step book and I went in the bathroom and I lit up a cigarette, looked up at the ceiling, and I said, all right, God, you and me, you know, let's do this. What I prayed was, I said, God, just let me this be as thorough as possible and let me tell the truth. And when I did it, it was just me and God talking to one another, and I was just writing. And that NA workbook is really freaking weird. So, it gives such roundabout shits, and then on every question it says, how does that make you feel? You know? So it's like, let's say it says, have you ever told a lie? You know? And then it says, how does that make you feel? And then it says, have you ever told something that is untrue? How does that make you feel? Have you ever stretched the truth to make something seem better or worse than it really was? How does that make you feel? You know? And, so... So I ended up, I looked at it, I looked at the subjects, and I turned around, I closed that book, and I just started writing. And it started out, I started in the beginning, I started out just naming all the shit that I've done in my whole life. And then I got to the resentments. I started naming off a couple of resentments. I only had like five. I only had like five at that time, you know. I had myself, I had my mom, my dad, my sister, and organized religion. And that was it. That was the only thing on there. And my organized religion was like 3 pages of why I resent organized religion. And my sister was like a page and a half. You know, my mom was, my mom really wasn't that much, actually. I love my mom. And my dad was a good grip, you know, and that was about it. Everything else, oh, I don't resent nobody. I love everybody, you know what I mean? And yeah, that changed. But anyway, so then I got to your worst secrets and all that, you know, and then at the end of it, it says, and I'll read it over and make sure everything is untrue, is true, you know. And so I read over it and I corrected some things that I had stretched the truth on. And got to the end and says, did you leave anything out? So I read through the whole thing again. I was like, yeah, and I wrote those down, you know. And then once again, I proofread it like maybe 4 or 5 times and added absolutely everything I could think of. And then I had to get it out. It was 4:30 in the morning and I had to get it out to somebody. So I woke up my girlfriend at the time. I said, babe, you gotta hear this or else I ain't gonna do it. So I woke her up and I did my fifth step with my wife, with my girlfriend, who ended up marrying me later, which is awesome. It can happen, don't suggest it. You know? And then in the morning, when I woke up in the morning, I called my sponsor and I went and I met with him and I did it. I did it again. And you know, and I didn't know what he was gonna think, because I have some pretty bad shit in there. You know, we all do. And I didn't know what he was going to think of me. I didn't know anything. And then he started sharing on all my worst shit, too. It's all the bad stuff. He had something to go with it, you know what I mean? And I felt connected and that I'm not the only one, you know? And at the end of it, you know, we burned it. At the end of it, we burned it. And I watched my whole life, all my shit just go up in the air, you know? And I felt nothing. I felt nothing over that. But a couple weeks later, when I thought about it, then it hit me. But at the end of it, I don't know, man. I felt naked. I felt ashamed. I didn't know if he was still gonna think of me the same, or anything. You know what I mean? And I went home feeling like that. And I don't know. It was kind of hard to sleep that night. And then maybe like 4 days later, I noticed like a certain peace inside of me, like all that shit had just been lifted, but it didn't come at once. It came later. At first, I was scared. I was nervous. I was naked, you know. I was naked in front of someone that I really didn't know, and it was hard. But writing it was easy, man. I did all that shit. Writing it was easy. I put it down. Reading it to somebody is hard, but it is well worth it. You know, if I wouldn't have done that the way I did it and as thorough as possible, if I would have left anything out, I don't think I would be sober today. In fact, I'm almost positive I would not be sober today, because when we keep secrets, those secrets eat at us, and to hide our own shit, when something pops up, you know, we end up telling lies, and then those lies eat at us, you know, and then everything starts coming down on us in our world, and we have no way of getting it out, because if we get it out, then we're going to expose ourselves, and then we're going to expose our lies, and then people are going to know us, and we're going to hurt people, we're going to hurt ourselves, and we end up feeling like total fucking shit, and then we drink, because there's nothing else to do but drink, you know. I remember So anyways, back up. All right. So I fired that sponsor. Fired because I pay him, you know. I fired that sponsor, and I got a new sponsor. I got Jim R, you know, and I started working the steps in AA. And the AA steps are cool, man. They're kicked back. You know, I said, hey, when are we going to work steps? He's like, you've been working 1, 2, and 3 for the last 3 weeks. You know, and then we started on the 4-step, and I did my 4-step again. And it was all the shit I had accumulated since my other 4-step, you know, because we end up doing a lot more shit and hiding more shit and having to do a whole nother 4-step. And that's what the 10-step is our daily inventory. Well, most of our daily inventories are more like monthly inventories or yearly inventories. Mm-hmm. But, you know, there are many 4s that we have to do. And I found that out one day when I had so much stress built up. I just had a miscarriage a while ago. Well, Amber did. I didn't, but we did. We had a miscarriage, you know, and then we got pregnant again, and we were moving into this new house. We were fixing it up, and just the stress from that, and work, and her, my father-in-law, her dad. Just built up. I ended up breaking out in shingles. I got shingles twice. I was I was 25 years old, you know what I mean? And I'm breaking out in shingles over stress. And what I realized was it was all just built up shit. You know, I had so much built up shit because I don't do this on a daily basis like I should. I wait until I have to do things because I'm fucking a bad procrastinator. And it got to that point where the only thing I could think of was killing Keith. Killing Keith. The only thought that ran through my head was, how can I smash this guy's face today? And I couldn't work. I couldn't eat. I couldn't sleep. I couldn't do anything but think about hurting him. And it hurts so bad because I'm not that way, man. I'm a really peaceful guy. And to have those thoughts running through my head on a constant basis was not okay. And the only option for me was to drink or get loaded to feel something else. Even if it's worse, I don't care. It needs to be different, you know. And I had it planned out. I was going to go drink. But I had band practice for the church because I played drums in the church. And they were having this big women's conference. So it was like really, really important for someone else. You know, it wasn't really important for me. It was important for them. I had to be there. So I showed up and I was sitting in my truck outside of it. I said, I'm going to go do this. If I do not feel different after this, I'm going to go drink. If I feel different, I'll call my sponsor. Sure enough, felt different. Call my sponsor. We met up. It was the roundup time at that time. I met him right outside the roundup. We worked in the inventory on it. And I found not really acceptance, I wouldn't say, but I got to unload everything. I got to see my part in things, and I got to find a way to deal with it so that I'm not in that state of mind anymore. You know, it's not really acceptance because a lot of the shit is unacceptable. But it's a way to manage, you know, and that seems to work, you know what I mean? It seems to work, because that was a few years ago, and I'm doing pretty good right now on that subject, you know. But as we live sober, as we live life, period, shit seems to piss us off, and if we don't deal with it, and we don't handle our shit, and we don't go to meetings, we don't talk to people, we don't work the steps, and we don't pray, then shit builds up again and we start getting in the same state of mind. Well, my wife had relapsed and she relapsed, and I was dealing with it, and I didn't know what to do. I was scared as fuck. And I was just going to work, trying to handle the kid. Kids started running rampant, you know, and I'm just trying to handle everything and do the ideal. And inside, I'm eating. I'm tore up, I'm eaten, I'm scared, I have no idea what's happening, what's going on, what to do. You know, I just keep putting one foot in front of the other and moving on. And then she comes back, and then she gets loaded again, starts screwing up again, and I don't know, once again I'm in that state where I just don't know what to do, and I'm scared. And I just kept talking to people, you know what I mean, talking to people and getting through it. And but I'm not writing anything. I'm not processing anything. And then I'm just kind of trying to stay up, you know, without actually processing emotions. Same things I always did as a kid, just kind of shut down and keep moving. Just shut down and keep moving, you know, and that's what I was doing. And then when she finally, when I sent her to detox and I sent her to a program and she came back, I didn't know what to do. You know, I wasn't processed in my head. I hadn't gone through everything. I hadn't done any work on it. You know, I was still in that frantic state of mind and I had a mental fucking breakdown. I had a straight mental breakdown and I left. And I was in, that was the worst state of mind I'd ever been in. And, but I didn't, I did some stupid shit, but I didn't drink, I didn't use. You know, thank God I was working offshore. I got the phone call to go get sent offshore, and I was on a platform working for over a month on and in, so that I didn't have any free time, you know, because I don't know what I would have done. And then I did a little writing on it, talked to my sponsor a lot more than I was writing, you know, and but I did a lot of thinking in that time, and I found out what was truly important to me, you know, and I decided to just come back. You know, anything that happens in life, I just have to be there. You know, I can make a choice. I have the ability to choose today, you know, and I can make choices and decisions. But those choices and decisions have consequences, have situations, and I need to be okay with them. And this program allows me to do that. And my higher power allows me to do that. You know, God's got my back through so many things all through my life. He's had my back and carried me, and I never really noticed it. You know, until I got clean and I watched it happen around me, and then I noticed all the things in my life. And like, God, dude, I rolled straight out of the gutter. You know, I'm a fucking gutter drunk, straight out of the gutter. I don't shower. I don't brush my teeth. I never put on deodorant. I would look like I'm wearing shit out of the trash can. I have no income. I really don't have no friends. And all I do is drink and get fucked up, you know, and I really don't care about anything else in my life. Well, now today, dude, I still don't shower on a regular basis. Half my clothes are pulled out of the dirty clothes. I dress up today out of respect and the fact that clothes make the man, you know what I mean? You gotta look sharp to feel sharp, you know? But I'm capable of showing love today. I'm capable of showing love. I'm capable of accepting compliments and love back, which is something I've never done. I've always pushed away from any tenderness. Any tenderness and love, I've always pushed away from that. And today I'm able to accept that. It's kind of awkward sometimes, but, you know, I'm able to accept it and take it for what it is. And give and express it back. You know, today I have an actual care and concern for your well-being, not just me trying to seem like I'm a good guy so you'll be my friend and give me shit. You know, I'm actually a care and concern for another human being. And today, you know, I lie, but I try not to, man. I stretch the truth a lot. All right, I try not to lie. You know, I don't steal. I try not to lie, I don't steal, and I try not to run, you know what I mean? Because that was my big thing, was running. You know, I'm not the guy who wants to fight everybody. I just say fuck you and do it anyway, you know. As soon as you're getting mad at me, fuck you and walk away. You know what I mean? And go do whatever I was doing anyway. And today's not like that. Today I have to actually stand accountable and I have to take care of my shit. And I have a pretty damn good life today. You know, it's really full, but it's really full of a lot of good things. And, you know, if it weren't for this program, I don't know what I'd do or what I'd be. You know, chances are I'd either be dead in jail or I'm in a ward. And today, you know, I might end up in the mental ward when I start getting older. You know what I mean? A little senile pops in. And eventually I am going to die. We all die. But fuck, dude, I got 3 speeding tickets. But I haven't been arrested in almost 6 years, you know. I haven't gotten an argument with my parents in almost six years. Fuck, dude, I'm about to have a baby. That's fucking amazing. In all reality, in all truth, I thought I was going to be dead before I hit 25. And And I lived like that. Like that was my motto. It didn't matter. I was going to die before 25. You know, and chances are I would have. But fuck, man. If it weren't for this program, I really don't know what I would do. I don't know how I would be. I don't know where I'd be. But because I sobered up and I worked these steps, you know, I'm able to find myself. I know who I am today. And I'm able to be there for other people and be a productive member of society. And fuck, man. Life's got up and downs. But it's like a roller coaster. You just kind of get strapped in and go for the ride. You know what I mean? There's nothing in this life you can't handle without God and the steps and other people to hold you up, which is what we do here. You know, we lift each other up. We tell our stories, our experience, strength, and hope, so that you may connect when you're having issues. You hear someone talking about the same thing, and then you're like, oh, shit, and he's doing it, and he's okay. You know, oh, he went through that. You know, I've been through 2 miscarriages. Been through my wife getting loaded on a relapse. You know, I've been through all the kid shit. My kid's still running rampant, you know, and he's a lot better now, though. He's getting better. I'll say it that way. You know, and I'm sober. You know, fuck, man. That's it. I'm done.